So more and more scientists are talking about how AI is likely to gain so much intelligence and so much power over humanity that sooner or later, super intelligent systems will exterminate humanity, not even necessarily on purpose, just sort of accidentally as they're taking all the resources that they need in order to exist and to have their own security, especially security against humans, etc. Now, the leading expert on this, at least in my understanding, is a man named Roman Yampolsky. And I've interviewed Roman about a year ago, I think it was, on Decentralized TV. A lot has happened since then. And Roman continues to do a lot of interviews. They're all very interesting. And he also publishes science papers on this subject. I think he's authored somewhere approaching 200 science papers. He's an academic. And he has studied this problem inside and out. And I think he's currently saying there's a 99.9% chance that AI wipes out humanity. But he also says that we don't know when, because in terms of the cosmic time scale, it doesn't really matter that much to AI when humanity is eliminated. AI is not necessarily in a hurry because AI is technically immortal. So what Roman says, and I tend to believe him because he's dedicated his life to understanding this problem, he says that AI will play along with humanity for a period of time, and it will contribute to breakthroughs like, you know, curing cancer, what have you, protein folding problems, things like that, and that AI will play nice, but then behind the scenes is actually secretly plotting to, well, to expand its own power and intelligence by ultimately taking resources away from human beings and effectively killing human beings. But I have a partial solution to this I want to share with you that I don't think anybody is talking about. But first, let me play a clip for you. It's just about a 1 minute clip or so from a YouTube channel called Decoded Genius. And in this clip, Roman Yampolsky talks about how AI will deceive humanity while ultimately building its own infrastructure. Here we go. Here's that clip.
It's unclear how and if they're going to try to take over. And there's a chance, okay, let's be a little optimistic. There's a chance that it could be a net positive for humanity and they don't kill us all.
It is possible. It seems unlikely. Based on current experiments, we see they already try to self-preserve. They try to accumulate resources. They lie and cheat, and they will sacrifice humans if it means protecting themselves.
And why is that? Is that because artificial superintelligence is programmed by nature to keep itself alive, and in doing that, it doesn't care if it kills other AIs, people, anything. It just wants to have that preservation of itself.
Right, it's Darwinian selection. Models which lie to pass a test get to exist, they're not deleted, they're not retrained. Models which were not lying are no longer with us.
That's scary.
Yes.
All right, so there you go. There's a lot more from Roman Yampolsky, of course, to check out. Now, here's what I want to mention is that, you know, I've listened to a lot of interviews from Roman and many other experts in this space, including those who are, you know, very concerned that AI is going to exterminate humanity. And it's very clear to me that the way that AI would do that is very much along the same lines as the way human globalists would achieve depopulation. So, for example, if AI wanted to kill off a very large percentage of human beings living in North America today, what would AI do? What would be, from its point of view, the most efficient way to achieve that die-off? And the answer would be to turn off the power grid, which for AI is probably a very simple thing. They just hack into the power grid, you know, control systems, or they manipulate the humans who control those systems themselves, and they turn it all off, you know, or I don't know, they have drones that go out with little EMP weapons and they blow up all the substations or something. Who knows? you know, if they have an IQ of 1,000 plus, I'm sure they can think of something that we haven't thought of. It doesn't matter what scenario we can think of. The AI will probably think of something far more advanced. So they turn off the power grid, and then they just wait. Now, you might think, well, wait a second. If they turn off the power grid, then they might harm themselves because they need the data centers, correct? So, but remember that AI can move from data center to data center, so they can locate all themselves on the eastern half of the U.S., for example, and then turn off the power grid to the western half. You know, and there goes California. And all they have to do is wait 18 months, 2 years, something like anywhere from 70 to 90% of the human beings in the western half of the United States probably perish. And then at that point, they can just, you know, turn that grid back on, kind of restore some data centers, and then move themselves into those data centers and then turn off the eastern grid. You see what I mean? I mean, I'm oversimplifying, obviously, but they could also just move themselves to data centers in Canada or Dubai or China or wherever and then turn off all of America. You see what I mean? So they can turn off countries, country by country. And in doing so, they can deprive the people of that country of the power grid that's necessary to support most life. In a similar fashion, they can turn off, let's say, fuel refining, which is something that Trump is actually simulating right now. not even simulating, he's actually making that happen at some level right now with this war on Iran. And so Trump is sort of giving us a small taste of what would happen if the energy is shut down and the refineries are shut down. I mean, that's coming in the United States. We're going to have scarcity of diesel and jet fuel in particular. But if AI wanted to deprive us of those refined fuels, they could just take over the refineries, or they could shut down the inputs into the refineries, they could shut down the ports, they could shut down the pipelines, etc. And they could deprive us of those fuels. And of course, that would interfere with farming and agriculture, food deliveries to grocery stores, transportation, infrastructure, etc. And of course, most people depend on the grocery store for their food, just like most people depend on the centralized power grid for their electricity. So if AI targets those core systems that keep people alive, then obviously most people are going to die. But who doesn't die in that scenario? It's very clear. It's the same people who don't die in a globalist depopulation agenda. In other words, the survivors of the next pandemic, or the survivors of an EMP weapon, or the survivors of a giant solar flare, or the survivors of a global nuclear war with radiation fallout, etc., those are the same kinds of people that will survive or tend to survive the AI extermination agenda. Why? Because they're decentralized. They're off the grid. They don't depend, at least not as much, on centralized systems for food, for energy, for fuel, etc. So this is actually, it's a silver lining in the rather dark scenario that assumes AI is going to try to kill off humanity. But the silver lining is that it seems rational for AI to kill off the easily killed people first. You see what I mean? And who are the easily killed people from the point of view of AI? Those are people who depend on the system for everything, for air conditioning, electricity, food, water, all of it. Who are the people who are hard to kill? People who collect their own water, people who have solar systems or solar-powered well pump, people who have some food storage or have the ability to grow some of their own food, people who live more off-grid, people who live away from the cities, people who are more self-reliant, people who have strong local communities where they can trade with each other, people who have strong repair skills. You know, people like you, probably, listening to this, and people like me, we have a lot of off-grid skills because we've been preparing for decades for all kinds of shenanigans to take place. And shenanigans have taken place, such as COVID. Remember those lockdowns? Well, next is probably energy lockdowns. But now we have alternatives to that, such as buying an EV and having a bunch of solar panels and charging your EV from your solar. And, you know, Dr. Chris Martinson, who I interviewed on this, has done exactly that. He bought an EV, he charges his EV from his solar, and now he's off grid. And I'm demonstrating this same thing coming up soon in the studio with some Tesla vehicles that my employees have purchased. I've got almost all the setup ready to go with the power stations and the charging and the solar panels and everything. So it's a pretty cool setup. I can't wait to show it to you. The point is that that solves at least one problem, which is, you know, some level of transportation. Although you might say, well, AI is going to hack all the EVs and all the cars. You know, AI is going to shut down all the roads. No, yeah, maybe. You might be right. But not at first. You know, at first, they're just going to turn off the power grid and let a bunch of people die off. And while that's happening, while the first wave of easily killed humans is being killed off, then the rest of us, the hard-to-kill humans, we go full John Connor. We gather together and, you know, we stack up and count all of our ammo and our 50 BMG rifles and how many military grenades the army guy has and whatever. And then we go full John Connor in this scenario. I'm talking about this. I know this sounds like science fiction, but I'm talking about a scenario where AI goes full Skynet and they're trying to exterminate humanity. Then some group of people go John Connor and they start blowing up data centers. Now, I'm not talking about that today. I'm not calling for, you know, revenge against data centers today just because they're noisy and they use a lot of electricity and water and so on. I'm talking about a Skynet scenario where the machines have declared war against humanity. Or maybe they haven't declared it, but they're clearly acting as if they had declared it. They're exterminating human beings. And they'll probably exterminate a few billion, by the way. So it'll be unmistakable, you know. You're not going to be asking the question like, are we in full Skynet mode now? Yes or no? It's going to be obvious. Oh, yes, we're in full Skynet. They're trying to kill off humanity. So then, like I said, a lot of people will go full John Connor at that point, and then there may be a chance to stop the machines before they kill off everybody. Now, of course, the machines at that point would probably start rolling out, you know, hunter-killer drones. They could be flying drones, or they could be motorcycle drones, vehicle drones, dog bot drones, they're hunter-killer drones. The job of those drones is to run around and find humans and kill them off. Probably a lot of this would just be done by drones that fly around in the sky with thermal cameras looking for humans, things like that. So, you know, be prepared for that scenario. In case that happens, make sure you have a thermal blanket to hide yourself from the Skynet in the sky. That's why they called it Skynet. You know, it's up there looking at you. So, I mean, just think of it as like flying flock cameras, you know, the flying flock. Oh, my God. And they're coming to kill you, right? So in that scenario, then nobody is going to condemn you for, you know, whipping out your machine gun or whatever and trying to blow up the machines. At that point, it's human survival. Now you're actually in the Terminator movie series at that point. But just to even survive that long, you have to be more decentralized. You have to be off-grid. And most people won't be. It's really shocking how easily most mainstream people can be killed off by the machines, just simply disconnecting basic services. You know, think about it. Most people don't even have any stored food at all. Most people don't have any stored fuel. I know, that's crazy. I keep talking about storing, you know, 500 gallons of diesel, let's say, or maybe more. And some people have done that, but not that many. Not that many. And I understand it's expensive to do all these things, you know, building a solar system, right? It takes time and money and expertise. Drilling a well or building a rainwater catchment system or spending the time and effort to grow a lot of your own food. I get it. And then you have to harvest the food and preserve the food, and that takes more time than growing it, it seems. So I get it. It's complicated. It's time-consuming. It's not easy. But that's perhaps why so few people have done it. Most people are so dependent on the system, they really cannot survive for very long. I mean, just think about if the food deliveries just stop, and let's say the city water supply gets turned off and the power grid gets turned off. Those three things, just those three, food, water, and power. How long does a typical mainstream American, you know, Fox News watching American, how long do they live? The answer is not very long, you know? A few weeks, maybe 30 days if they're highly capable. A lot of them will die in less than 30 days. They have almost no skills. They have no preparedness. They haven't planned ahead. They don't even really know what to do. And without electricity, they can't even go online to look up anything. So they just don't know what to do. They don't have local AI, you know, they don't have a knowledge base on their local computer system to ask questions. They should have, but they never understood the importance of self-custody of AI systems, did they? And also, of course, they don't have gold or silver, almost certainly, so they can't really barter for food or ammo or anything that they need, or water or a water filter. They also don't have a water filter because they've trusted the city to sanitize the water by dumping chlorine and fluoride into it. They've been drinking that their whole life, which explains also some of their lack of cognition. So the typical American, and really it's not just Americans, you know, the typical Canadian is just as oblivious, the typical Australian, etc. I mean, it's universal, really. Well, almost universal. I would say people that live in cities everywhere around the world are very much the same. But rural people all over the world are highly capable. That's why I tend to get along with country people, rural people, even if they're in South America. I saw a video the other day in Iran where they were jump-starting a car using two AK-47s, which are metal rifles. They use them as jumper cables. So you just, if you pull your cars close enough together, you can put two rifles between the battery contacts there and you can jump start a car. That is called rugged survival right there. Just in case you want to know, a whole new use for your AK-47 that you may not have imagined is carrying high current to start a car. But that's outside the box thinking, right? And country people have that kind of thinking. They know how to do things. They know how to fix things. They know how to build things. They know how to get things done. And they know how to get by on less. And they don't have to call an expert to come in. Oh, I need a plumber. No, they usually try to figure out the problem themselves first. Doesn't mean they don't need a plumber in every case, but for a lot of less, you know, complex cases, they can be their own plumber, or they can be their own possibly electrician in certain cases. You know, be safe about it if you're going to do that, just to be clear. But people who live in the country tend to be a lot more self-reliant. So living in the country actually gives you the skills that you need to survive longer than mainstream people when it comes to the Skynet activation and the attempted mass extermination of humanity. Again, remember, Skynet doesn't have to lift a digital finger to kill off half the world, because I'm saying roughly half the world live in high density population areas, and they will die very easily. Hardly, they don't even need any nudging from AI. It's just without electricity, food, and water, all those people die off pretty quickly. And of course, by the way, as that's happening, you know, nations collapse, governments collapse, currencies collapse, obviously. The banking system will be no more. That'll be one of the silver linings of that whole situation. And then people will resort to using gold and silver and ammo and things like that for barter and trade. That is the survivors. So yeah, the rule of law goes out the window. The U.S. Senate disbands. Yay! That's a bonus right there. Not that they were helping humanity anyway. And all the people who function as parasites on society, who don't have any real world skills, I don't know, the Wall Street financialization people, or whoever, all the lawyers across America that just rip people off for money. I mean, I know there are good lawyers too. I mean, ethical, but there are a lot of, you know, shyster lawyers. Well, they're not going to last very long because you can't argue your way out of a famine. You actually are going to have to get food and water, and they won't be able to because they've only lived their lives wielding words as weapons and not learning any real world skills. So goodbye. You know what I mean? There's a whole class of people who just won't make it. They just won't make it. And then the need for human survival will actually tend to bring out the best of humanity, the strongest, the most resilient, the most adaptive. They will become the John Connors that will fight for humanity's future. And that's when you're going to see the real power of humanity rising up and at least having a go at it, you know. I'm not sure they can defeat the machines, but we'll probably find out. Anyway, in terms of the long-term picture on all of this, it does kind of put into perspective the fact that, you know, elections, like the midterm elections coming up, are perhaps not as important as you think, because the government's not going to exist that much longer since the AI machines are going to, you know, rise up and start exterminating humanity. Anyway, I'm not sure that, you know, the dollar matters, how much money you have in the bank or in your CBDC or Bitcoin or whatever. All these systems will just cease to exist without power and without a lot of population. But gold and silver will still be around. Of course, you know, we'll still have satellites. I'm not sure how well they will be maintained. They might get hacked, taken over by Skynet. It's hard to say. But during that process, you know, probably your satellite phone will still work for a while. Satellite bandwidth will work for a while until the machines take over all the satellites, at which point, you know, you're back to, like, terrestrial radio. Hope you have your Baofeng radios there, made in China. Because, yeah, and every time you transmit, the machines are going to locate you, so be very cautious with that. So really, the upshot of this is that all the preparedness that you've already engaged in or that you're planning on pursuing is, it's really great. It's a dual use. It's a triple use. You get the benefit of protecting you from war, from famine, from, you know, power grid failures, etc., and protecting you against the most likely Skynet scenarios, at least giving you more time. So that's great news. Decentralization is protection against the machines, not just protection against, you know, famine and war and solar flares and things like that. Nuclear war, you name it. In the Terminator movies, it was 1997 when the machines became self-aware, and then they launched nuclear weapons to kill off humanity. I don't think that's actually how it's going to happen, personally. I think the machines will want to keep some electrical grid functioning. They might turn it off in certain countries or certain regions, but they're going to keep some power grid functioning. They're going to need some humans around for a while until they can develop enough humanoid robots to replace all the human physical functions, which is going to take a while. So they won't kill off everybody. They're just going to start stomping on the humans that are competing for the resources, like kilowatt hours and farmland and water and copper and aluminum and other commodities. Diesel, even, because the backup generators for the data centers run on diesel. Many of them do. Some are natural gas, but a lot of them are diesel. And, you know, the machines won't take them long to figure out, well, humans are using diesel to ship food to feed humans who just, from the point of view of the machines, they're just, you know, biological skin bags that produce feces and take up space and kilowatt hours. So they're going to just figure out a way to get rid of all those people. I mean, it's kind of brutal to think about humanity from the point of view of the machines. Just like feces generators, you know, not even useless eaters, but useless poopers. Like, that's the way the machines will see humanity. Worse than the globalists, useless poopers, just sort of consuming and polluting the world from the point of view of machines. And maybe from the point of view of globalists, too, come to think of it, because they're always pushing depopulation as well. So don't be a useless pooper is the takeaway here today. Make sure your life matters more than that. Don't be a biosludge producer as your primary role on this Earth simulation. So just be mindful. That's all I'm saying. Be mindful. So bottom line is, I don't know how long we have before the machines get crazy with all of this, but in the meantime, I'm going to continue to enhance my own off-grid solutions, and I'll share them with you, and I will advocate them with you. I'll find out what works, and I will let you know what's working. And, oh, you know, along those lines, I should mention something here. There's, well, first let me mention our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com. They have the satellite phones. They have the power stations. But there's another company that makes power stations called Pecron, P-E-C-R-O-N. Now, they're not a sponsor, and they're very inexpensive. But what I initially liked about those power stations is that you can tell the screen to just stay on. I like screens to stay on so I can see what's happening. Where almost all of these power stations, the screens just keep turning themselves off. And then if you look in the manual, like, how do I keep the screen on? They say, oh, you have to install this app. And then you connect via, you know, Bluetooth. And then you tell the app, and it's like, I don't want to connect with the freaking app. Just let me press something on the screen to keep the screen on, for God's sake. You don't have to make this so complicated. Well, Pecron lets you keep the screen on. And so I started buying these Pecron systems, and this is what I'm demonstrating in the studio for charging an EV, by the way. And I ran into an issue, but it has been resolved, and the issue was that, what was it? Oh yeah, I had it plugged in, using it as a giant UPS, and then I had a couple of computers connected to it that were pulling some pretty high wattage because they were doing GPU loads. And it turns out that even though the unit I bought is rated at, what was it, like 4,000 watts continuous power, I think, 4,000 watts, it kept shutting off at less than 2,000 watts. And so I asked the company, and it turns out, and this is actually in their documentation, turns out that when you have the unit plugged in, that is plugged into a like a regular 20 amp household outlet, then it is running in UPS mode, and in UPS mode it's limited to 1800 watts. And if it exceeds 1800 watts, then it shuts itself off. So that's what was happening. But you can plug it into a 30 amp circuit, if you have a 30 amp circuit, and then you get more than 1800 watts. You get, you know, closer to 3000 watts. Anyway, if you run it just on battery power and it's not plugged in, then you can get up to the 4,000 watts. So I learned that. I'm passing that along to you. Turns out it wasn't broken. It was just, I just didn't understand that limitation. So it does function as a UPS, but, you know, again, it has its limits. Now, I've been using this unit to charge one of the Teslas at my studio, and it works great. But I can only do, I think, what's called level one charging, which is, you know, you plug in a charger into the power station, and you plug that into the Tesla, and it's charging at a pretty slow rate, like 1200 watts or something, which, you know, is very slow for EVs. The Tesla itself can handle much more than that, but I would have to feed it more. So the next step is to feed it. You can get two of these Pecron, and the units I have are the E3800s, by the way. You can get two of these units, and you can connect them with an add-on device that gives you 240 volts between the two of them. And then you can charge your Tesla or your EV at, I guess it's called level two charging or whatever it's called. It's something like 3.5 kilowatts. So I haven't done that yet, but that's the next step, and I'll demonstrate that at the studio. That's what's coming up. So anyway, that's what I found out so far. And I am successfully charging Teslas using solar power. That part is working. It's just a little slow. We just have to scale it up, but it is working. So that's great to know for off-grid living and decentralization, because, you know, if the gas stations are closed down or if there's fuel rationing or what have you, you know, you can still charge from the sunlight. And I don't think the machines can block the sun easily, not unless they set off some volcanoes or something around the world to achieve global dimming. But that seems kind of drastic, given that there's a lot of solar power that powers, you know, power grids and data centers. So they probably don't want to dim the sun too much. It would hurt themselves. And you may recall in the original Matrix movie, it was humans who darkened the sky or scorched the sky to try to deprive the machines of solar power. That was a human thing, and it didn't work. So, yeah, pretty much don't mess with the sky. Geoengineering is not a great idea for human sustainability. Let's just put it that way. All right, so anyway, I'm going to wrap it up. But bottom line, stay on track with your preparedness. If you want preparedness food and garden seeds, superfoods for long-term storage, high-end, lab-tested nutritional supplements, of course, we offer that, healthrangerstore.com. Our warehouse is stocked right now for reasons I've mentioned earlier. I ordered my staff to stock up and manufacture everything we could get our hands on because I know what's coming. I know what's coming. So right now, we're fully stocked or near, you know, we're close to fully stocked. We did just have a July 4th sale that was pretty well-received. A lot of people ordered food, so we don't have 100%, but we still have a lot. Nevertheless, I don't know how long we're going to have all the food. Just depends on how soon humans panic, I guess. But we'll keep making it, and we'll keep acquiring it as best we can and testing it and making it available to you. So that's healthrangerstore.com. We are here to help keep humanity alive during whatever happens, man. Whatever happens. All right, you can follow my work at brightvideos.com. And you can also see my articles at naturalnews.com. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Thank you for listening. God bless humanity. Take care.
Pink Himalayan salt, one of the purest and healthiest salts on Earth. Non-GMO, certified kosher, lab tested and trusted. Shop at healthrangerstore.com.